Welcome to As It Is, a 30-minute program designed for English learners. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world.
First, North Korea has declared a military takeover of the Kaesong Industrial Area and called South Korea's decision to suspend operations a declaration of war. Mario Ritter has more.
North Korea said it was responding to South Korea's decision to suspend operations at the jointly run Kaesong Industrial Area. The North also froze South Korean assets and expelled South Koreans from the factory. South Korea suspended operations in response to North Korea launching a long-range missile Sunday. The North said the missile test was to put an Earth observation satellite in orbit. But the United States, South Korea, and other nations said the launch tested a missile able to carry a nuclear weapon. North Korea also tested a nuclear weapon in January. In addition to South Korea's move to close Kaesong, the United States Senate approved sanctions against the North after the missile launch. The sanctions target the North's nuclear program and its poor human rights record. The economic sanctions are meant to reduce revenue going to the government of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. Republican Senator Bob Corker is the chair of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. He said the bill would require the president to look at a number of issues related to North Korea.
The president will be required to investigate a wide range of sanctionable conduct, including proliferation of weapons of mass destruction, arms-related materials, luxury goods which affect the elite in that country, human rights abuses, activities undermining cybersecurity.
Democratic Senator Ben Cardin of Maryland said the bill penalizes Chinese and other groups that work with North Korea. Over the weekend, China joined other members of the UN Security Council to approve a statement condemning North Korea's missile launch. The Council pledged to quickly adopt a resolution with significant new sanctions against North Korea. So far, that has not happened. The suspension of the Kaesong Industrial Area will be costly for North Korea. James Kim is with the Asan Institute for Policy Studies based in Seoul. He said the suspension would cost North Korea about $100 million a year in lost income. He said the amount is considerable for an economy that's not that big. The special industrial area was opened in 2004 as an economic link between the two Koreas. It is also a symbol of reconciliation between the two sides. Trade in the special zone has grown regularly over the years. However, operations at Kaesong have been suspended before. In 2013, North Korea withdrew its workers and closed down the area for 5 months. David Straub of Stanford University said it is unclear what impact the sanctions would have if the U.S. legislation is signed into law. He said the recent developments were not a surprise. He added that the decision to suspend work at more than 120 factories was difficult for South Korean President Park Geun-hye. He said the cost to South Korean companies that have invested in the project will be high. Since 2013, North Korea has pursued what has been called a Byungjin policy of developing the economy and nuclear weapons. North Korea considers both important for its independence. I'm Mario Ritter.
Russia has made a proposal for a ceasefire in Syria, but differences of opinion between diplomats continue over the possible end to armed fighting. Ann Ball has the report.
The Europeans see the proposal as a way to delay agreement on how to end the Syrian civil war. They say the plan would give Russia time to continue intense airstrikes on Aleppo, Syria's second largest city. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov said his country had offered a quite specific proposal. He spoke in Germany Thursday as he sat down for talks with U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry. Russia and the United States are a part of the 17-country International Syria Support Group, ISSG. We wait for the American response before we take it, the proposal, to the ISSG, Lavrov said. Western media reports say Russia wants the ceasefire to take effect on March 1st. That would be too late to stop a humanitarian crisis in and around Aleppo. In Washington, a U.S. government spokesman said the Obama administration wants an immediate truce. The Russian proposal comes while a Russian-supported Syrian government offensive and siege near Aleppo continues. The fighting and airstrikes have forced thousands of Syrians to flee toward the Turkish border. Aid groups say nearly 100,000 Syrians have fled from their homes in the past week. Kerry is also meeting with Syrian opposition leader Riyad Hijab. On Wednesday, Hijab and other opposition representatives met with British Foreign Secretary Philip Hammond and other officials in London. Talks between the Syrian government and opposition were suspended in early February. They were halted partly because of opposition concerns about the bombing campaign in Aleppo. I'm Ann Ball.
Next week, President Barack Obama will host the leaders of the 10 Association of Southeast Asian Nations, or ASEAN. The meeting will take place near Palm Springs, California. The meeting demonstrates the growing economic importance of the ASEAN countries, but observers doubt that any key results will come from the meeting. Mary Gottschall has the story.
United States President Barack Obama will host the leaders of the 10 ASEAN members next week in California. ASEAN is the Association of Southeast Asian Nations. Its 10 member countries are Brunei, Cambodia, Indonesia, Laos, Malaysia, Myanmar, Philippines, Singapore, Thailand, and Vietnam. Last year, ASEAN leaders created the ASEAN Economic Community. The aim is to increase trade, investment, and economic ties among the 10 nations. ASEAN leaders will meet with President Obama at the 80-hectare Sunnylands Estate in California. The estate was once the home of a billionaire publisher. President Obama hosted Chinese President Xi Jinping there in 2013. President Obama personally invited all the ASEAN leaders to Sunnylands when he attended the ASEAN summit last November in Malaysia. The summit participants will address key regional security and trade issues. They are also expected to discuss climate change and human trafficking. Obama administration officials see ASEAN as a key part of America's foreign policy focus on Asia and the Pacific. The U.S. also wants to increase its economic ties with the region. But observers do not expect any major results or developments from the meeting. Simon Tay is chairman of the Singapore Institute of International Affairs. He said that because 2016 is President Obama's last year in office, he does not believe a great deal of substance will come from next week's meeting. Observers expect a key topic at the meeting to be China's growing assertiveness in the disputed South China Sea. The Philippines and Vietnam are among the countries involved in territorial disputes with China in the South China Sea. Leaders from both countries want the United States to give them guarantees about security. But other ASEAN member countries do not want to anger Chinese leaders. That divide among member nations could also make it difficult for major developments to result from the meeting in California. Chin Leng Lim is an international law professor at Hong Kong University. He said ASEAN member countries do not agree on several major issues. Because of this, he says, the United States is firmly in the driving seat of this summit. In other words, the United States could have control of the meeting. A major topic among ASEAN nations is trade. Last week in New Zealand, 12 countries signed the Trans-Pacific Partnership. The TPP trade agreement includes four ASEAN members: Brunei, Malaysia, Singapore, and Vietnam. Two other ASEAN members, Indonesia and Thailand, could also soon join the TPP. ASEAN members have been talking with six other countries about forming another free trade agreement called the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership. Those six countries are Australia, China, India, Japan, South Korea, and New Zealand. Deborah Elms is executive director of the Asian Trade Center in Singapore. She says the signing of the TPP and the RCEP negotiations mean ASEAN is facing more competition. She says ASEAN should take regional integration seriously to remain globally important. ASEAN launched its own economic community, the AEC, at the beginning of the year. It creates a single market for goods, services, capital, and labor. So far, it has not shown strong results. But its supporters say that it will reach its goal of being a single market and production base by the year 2020. The Asian Development Bank says it has the potential to become one of the largest economies and markets in the world. ASEAN nations have a population of over 626 million people and an economy valued at $2.4 trillion. ASEAN represents the third largest economy in Asia, behind China and India, and the seventh largest economy in the world. I'm Mary Gottschall.
Recently, we received our supply of VOA wall calendars for 2016. To get your calendar, simply send an email to us at learningenglish@voanews.com or write to VOA Learning English, Voice of America, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. Be sure to include your mailing address when you write. We have a limited number of calendars left, and when they are gone, they are gone. So write to us today. Indian officials suspect that a meteorite may have killed a man in southern India. But their claim has yet to persuade American scientists. Ana Mateo tells us more.
It sounds like the opening act of a science fiction film. Indian officials say they believe a meteorite killed a man on Sunday in the southern state of Tamil Nadu. A local television station, NDTV, reported an Indian government minister as saying that a meteorite fell on the grounds of a private engineering college. This official said the space rock created a 2-meter-wide hole, or crater, on the college campus. The American Space Agency, NASA, was quick to react. It said that photographs of the crater seem to show a land-based explosion may have caused the damage. While the cause is unknown, debris from the blast killed a man standing nearby. Witnesses say the blast also shook buildings and broke windows. The head of the college told the Associated Press police recovered an object that investigators plan to test. The object is described as dark blue with jagged edges. It is reportedly small enough to be held in a closed hand. However, it is unknown if it came from space or could have fallen off a passing airplane. Officials have tested the crater for metals. They also plan to examine soil from the crater. The cause of the explosion is not yet known. However, what is known is that even native English speakers have trouble with the words meteor, meteoroid, and meteorite. If you have ever seen a shooting star, you have seen a meteor. The science website Hubble.com says, "A meteor is the flash of light we see in the sky when a small piece of interplanetary debris burns up as it passes through our atmosphere." Meteor means the burst of light caused by the debris, not the debris itself, says the website. The debris is called a meteoroid. A meteoroid is interplanetary matter. It is smaller than a kilometer wide and can often be only a few millimeters in size. Most meteoroids that enter Earth's atmosphere are so small that they vaporize completely and never reach the surface. But if any part of a meteoroid lands on Earth, it is called a meteorite. Most meteorites are very small. However, they can vary in size. They can be as small as a pebble or as big as a huge, life-destroying boulder. This recent incident in India comes nearly 3 years after a large meteor was seen streaking across the sky in the Russian city of Chelyabinsk. The shock from the blast injured more than 1,000 people and caused extensive property damage. I'm Ana Mateo.
This is What's Trending Today. The hashtag, I'm Not Kidding Maddie, is everywhere on social media this week. The hashtag comes from an email sent by former U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. She is one of two candidates seeking the Democratic Party's presidential nomination. This week, Clinton lost to Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders in the Democratic primary election in New Hampshire. After the loss, the Clinton campaign team sent an email to her supporters. The subject of the email was, "I'm not kidding," followed by the supporter's name. "I'm not kidding" is another way of saying, "I am being serious." The email was asking her supporters to give any small amount of money to Clinton's political campaign. One of her supporters, named Maddie, found humor in the email message. In the email, her campaign team wrote, "I'm not kidding, Maddie. I'm asking you to give $1 right now." Maddie published images of the email she received on social media. From there, people began making jokes about it on the internet. Some compared Clinton's email to the $1 menu at McDonald's restaurants. Although most people just joked about the hashtag, some on social media wrote that the email and hashtag could end up hurting Hillary Clinton. A now-famous internet meme that compares the two Democratic presidential candidates also joined the hashtag "I'm not kidding Maddie" conversation. The Bernie versus Hillary meme gives mostly humorous opinions from both candidates about campaign issues. This week's issue, Maddie's dollar. Under Sanders' photograph are the words, "Maddie works very hard for her money, and she's entitled to donate to a candidate who will work for her." Under Clinton's photo, it just said, "I'm not kidding, Maddie." And that's what's trending today.
We know we cannot change the past, but sometimes we speak as if we could change it. That is the time to use the unreal conditional. Sad songs and stories are full of sentences using this form. A similar form is the mixed conditional. Adam Brock and Jill Robbins bring us this week's lesson in everyday grammar.
This week, we are going to talk about the past unreal conditional. Past unreal conditionals are often used to express wishes about the past. They often show regret or sad feelings about something that happened in the past. Here's an example. "If I had studied, I would have passed the test." In this example, there's an implied wish that the speaker had studied. A conditional sentence has two parts. The first part is the if clause, "if I had studied." The second part is the result clause, "I would have passed the test."
To form the past unreal conditional, use the past perfect in the if clause. Use had followed by a past participle verb to form the past perfect. In the result clause, use would have followed by the past participle. Use past unreal conditionals to talk about how you would have acted differently if you had had more information. Basically, if I had known A, I would have done B. Imagine you brought chocolate for a coworker. You didn't know it at the time, but your coworker was diabetic. In this situation, you could say, "If I had known you were diabetic, I would not have brought chocolate." Some Americans use the simple past in the if clause of a past unreal conditional. For example, there's an old song called, "If I knew you were coming, I'd have baked a cake." In formal speech or writing, the correct form is, If I had known you were coming, I would have baked a cake. There is often a difference between how grammar is taught and how ordinary people use it in conversation.
A conditional sentence can start with the if clause or the result clause. In the classic American film, It's a Wonderful Life, the main character, George Bailey, is thinking about killing himself. In a moment of sadness, George says that life would have been better if he had never been born. Listen to this dialogue between George and his guardian angel, Clarence.
Yeah, so you still think killing yourself would make everyone feel happier, eh?
Oh, I don't know. I guess you're right. I suppose it'd been better if I'd never been born at all.
What'd you say?
I said I wish I'd never been born.
Notice how George puts the result clause first when he says, I suppose it would have been better if I had never been born. George also shortens would have to would have, and I had to I'd. Native speakers often use contractions with the words had and have. That means a past unreal conditional will often have two contractions in it. An extra challenge for English learners. Sometimes speakers want to express how something that did not happen in the past has an effect in the present. For example, if I had been born in China, I would speak Chinese. Or, if I had quit university, I would not have this job. These are called mixed conditionals. In a mixed conditional, the if clause remains in the past perfect, but the result clause changes to the simple present to emphasize the effect in the present.
To emphasize a feeling of regret, add only to the if clause. Listen to this sad song by country singer Reba McEntire.
If I had only known it was the last walk in the rain, I'd keep you out for hours in the storm.
This song is an example of a mixed conditional. The if clause, if I had only known it was the last walk in the rain, is in the past perfect. But the result clause, I'd keep you out for hours in the storm, is in the simple present. The singer is emphasizing her present feelings about something that did not happen in the past. Past unreal conditionals are complex grammar structures. Make sure you have mastered the past perfect, the present perfect, and irregular verbs before studying advanced conditionals. For a simpler lesson on conditionals, see our previous episode of Everyday Grammar called Introducing Conditionals. When you are ready, a good way to practice past unreal conditionals is to ask your English-speaking friends if they have any regrets. You could ask, if you could change something about your past, what would you change? We'll leave you now with another song of regret by Brooke Benton.
Darling, if I had known I'd miss you like I know since you've gone, if only I had known.
I'm Adam Brock.
And I'm Jill Robbins.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.